Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host this morning. This is another in our ongoing series, The Food Revolution Papers, a chance to explore the murky world of politics in food. As always, I'm joined by my good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Good morning to both of you.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
How is sunny California?
It's been sunny, good compared to my friends in the Midwest. It's only in the 80s here. I have friends in Phoenix who are complaining it's been 111, so we consider this a good day.
Right. I actually spent some time in Phoenix. It gets really ugly in the summer.
Oh, yeah. I tell a story that first week of June in the middle 70s, I pulled in there. I was had driven from Denver to New Mexico and then back down to Phoenix, and I got a flat tire coming to town. It was so hot, but I didn't notice because I had air conditioning on, and in the mid-70s, there wasn't a thermostat, a thermometer on your dashboard. So I got out of the car in a gas station. I pulled, just kind of limped into the shade inside the covered part of the station. I got out, I looked up, and it said 124 degrees. I said, no wonder my tire exploded. And that's my experience with Phoenix.
Actually, it's not a Phoenix story. It's a California story. I remember the first time I went to Cathedral City, which is Palm Springs.
Right.
I was living in San Diego. Delightful place, beautiful weather. It was high 70s this particular day. Got in my little work vehicle and headed off. And unconsciously, I kept cranking the air conditioning a notch more, a notch more, a notch more. Not thinking. I arrived in Palm Springs, opened the car door, and I went, my God, I just died.
I know. I've done that a few times up there myself. I actually went to school there for the fourth or fifth grade. My mother owned a business there, and I would have to ride my bike to school every morning in that heat, and it was not a joy at all.
I don't fare well in this weather. I absolutely have to have air conditioning. I don't know when I became such a wimp over the weather, but air conditioning is the route to go.
Absolutely. I'm with you, actually.
I think America is in a complete agreement on this one.
Although I guess it was like that as a kid, too. You remember the sprinklers? You probably have, the sprinklers that go back and forth, one little one that you put on the lawn. We used to live as a kid underneath those sprinklers. We would race the sprinkler.
I'm not a fan of those sprinklers because it just encourages the grass to grow. And then
you're saying this is someone who spent 2 months fretting over the lawn in my backyard, standing and staring at it and fertilizing it and talking to my gardener about how we can get it thicker and better. So, some of us actually try, but you notice I did not mention I ever mowed it.
Right.
But we did manage, without Roundup, to acquire beautiful grass and wonderful weeds. But they're not resistant.
So, Simon, we got to take away from all this fun and get back to the issue, which is the politics of food today. And as I mentioned to everybody, the outgoing Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, said to Congress, all governments lie to each other. What he should have said is that all governments and big business lie to each other and to their citizens and to our country. So since they find it so easy to lie to us, Simon, Ash, and I agree it's our opportunity to expose those lies and have a great deal of fun in the politics of food, because if you don't laugh a little bit at this, it's going to tear you apart because the politics are getting as bad about food as it is in our Congress. So we're going to talk about a lot of things, new things today. Recall, Ashley's got a couple recalls, or one at least that I know of, that you won't find in the newspaper. And then we're going to talk about America's favorite, genetically modified chocolate. It's becoming a reality of the future. So, Ashley, do you have any cute little stories for us before we jump into chocolate?
Well, I don't know how cute this is. I did want to talk a little bit about the problem of travel right now, where it seems that since they don't want to profile people, a 95-year-old woman was recently profiled. She was June 27th, and I guess that the elderly, since they're going to be profiled with Medicare, might as well profile them at the airport. They were checking her and screening her for the entry to the security boarding, and in order to, apparently the security alarm went off, so they took her to they wheeled her off to a little room, and could not.
How old was she?
95 years old. So they couldn't tell with this 95-year-old that she what was going on with her diapers. So they decided that her diaper was soaked, and they said, "Well, you know, your diaper's soaked. We can't really tell whether or not you're, you know, carrying a bomb in the diaper." So her 60-something-year-old daughter was standing next to her, who's an RN, offered to remove the diaper because her choice was remove the diaper, or she didn't go on the plane. And then once the diaper was removed, and again it was soaked with urine, they still couldn't tell if that's what was setting it off, so she had to enter the plane without her diapers on. So is this the wave of the future, Manny?
I don't know, but I got to tell you, Simon, if someone messes with my diaper, they're looking for trouble.
What do you think about that, Simon?
Nothing shocks me anymore when it comes to airplane travel. But that is somewhat reminiscent of a story that hit the news a couple of months ago, and it involved a six-year-old child who they decided they were going to pat down. And
no,
basically,
6 years old?
Maybe the guard was a pedophile, Simon.
I mean, you know, how many 95-year-old terrorists and 6-year-old terrorists do you know of?
I don't want to incriminate myself here, but no, I agree with you. I think it's absolutely absurd. I mean, at some point, you have to be rational about all this, and it just isn't rational.
Do you remember back in June where the lady trying to get on the plane, she was left in limbo for 5 days on the airline because they refused to allow her onto the airline? She had four-stage breast cancer, was returning to South Korea, and they would not allow her on the plane because they said she was too sick. And
yes,
apparently they called a triage person who said, no, don't allow her on the plane. So there's a medlife.com that they work with, and eventually she did get back to Korea, and she has recently passed away. But at least she was allowed to go home and see her family and die, which is all she wanted to do, peacefully take her morphine, get on the plane, go home, and die with her family. So I don't know where this is such a fine line right now with the terrorists, but terrorists and people who are sick, that it's really, I think, kind of, I don't know what they're going to do about these laws.
Actually, that particular story, the lady with the breast cancer.
Yes, it was very disturbing.
She was trying to fly on Korea Air, I believe.
I think you're right.
They were the ones that refused to fly her. The story sort of had a happy ending. As I recall, Delta stepped in.
Yes.
And flew her. Better than that, they gave her an upgrade to first class.
I read it and I actually cried. I felt so much for this woman and their family. And I guess there's a consumer advocate for people at, I think the site's called FlyersRight.com. And there is, so that flyersrights.com where people can go into and how the, I think maybe perhaps that's where Delta got wind of it. I'm not quite sure, but I think that the, you're right, it was a very happy ending, and I was very pleased to hear that they flew her first class so that she could have a comfortable ride home. I think it's the lack of humanity right now that's really bothersome. I mean, to take a six-year-old and pat her down, I mean, I would be traumatized at 6 years old. And then to take a, you know, a 95-year-old in a diaper, or if you use a fourth stage, I mean, you can look at somebody in fourth stage cancer, you know that they're dying. You know she's not packing a bomb, you know, and whatever. So, and I sort of, I'm sorry, Simon.
Well, all I was going to say was I have traveled a lot in my life, and I used to really, really enjoy air travel. There's just something magical about airplanes, big ones, small ones, helicopters, anything. But now, I dread it. Absolutely dread it. It's almost as if you are accused of being a murderer, you know, and you have to prove your innocence before you're allowed to get on the damn airplane.
It was, you know, I was during the 9/11 event. I was flying. We've discussed how I was flying back to Ohio during that time because somebody had. It was an elder abuse situation with my aunt, and my aunt was in her 80s. She still is in her 80s. The caretaker, Catherine Monk, had been caught at abusing her. And I was at that time flying back and forth to Ohio during the 9/11 event. So I had to go through all the screenings. And what was amazing to me is that the airlines were so busy trying to not profile and so concerned about it that people who, you're from that neck of the woods. I mean, if I were going into Germany say it's in Germany or it's in that neck of the woods and I'm this nationality, you would think that's the person they're going to scream more. But they were pulling people like me with blonde hair aside and checking me while people who had full-out, you know, turbans on that were not being checked into the planes, you know, and it was so busy trying not to profile or offend anybody that it became offensive to, you know, Americans and people with diapers and, you know, this is, so how do you correct that, Manny?
I correct things the United States government does, it's virtually impossible. And let's face it, the mentality of the people who go to work for the airlines to perform this judge are not your best citizens, nor you're the best people that I, or the people that I would want to do it. And sadly, anyone who probably is qualified or should be doing it probably wants nothing to do with it. So you sort of have this terrible situation where it's a job most people in America probably don't really want, and at the same time, it's an important job to Americans. So we're suffering from that, and I think it's a terrible problem.
One of the things I liked during that time period, though, that made me feel a little safer was the fact that there was presence of our military. So I think maybe that's part of the solution. You know, the ROTC guys who are working on weekends, maybe, you know, having some of them go to the airport. And it's kind of like having a policeman on your street. Your speeding on that street decreases the minute they seek police.
Well, let's end it with this. They did that in Los Angeles, believe it or not, and had National Guard and other military for a while at the airport. And everyone agreed they were far more courteous, far nicer, and far easier to deal with. And everybody in Los Angeles preferred to have the military over the private security people. And that's as much of a comment as I want to make. So let's switch to something a little more fun for a moment. Yesterday, Ash and I visited a couple friends from Beverly Hills, Ron Magnan and David Laredo, who own the Nosh in Beverly Hills, which is a notorious hangout for showbiz people, comedians, and others. And it's right in the Beverly Hills Triangle, about a block from Rodeo Drive. And, you know, we sat down and had a brunch, and they talked to us about their goal of shifting to as much organic as they can and opening an organic restaurant. Ron sadly suffers from similar health problems as I have. And so he decided to try to take a traditional Jewish deli and turn it into a more of an organic place, which makes him really a leader. And they discussed how they found a company that basically provides nothing but organics for restaurants, a huge company we haven't had time to investigate yet, and how they've got a lot of their suppliers, like General Mills, to certify that the flour they use to make their own bagel is actually GMO-free, and a variety of other different companies that provided different things, and how their quest to have higher quality food served in the deli, I think, is really remarkable. And it made Ash and I think that if every restaurant owner in the United States started moving to the principles they have, no, they can't be 100% organic, but if they can be 60-70% organic, it would improve everybody's health. And if every restaurant, and especially fast foods, could get up to 60-70% of their food is organic, I think we agree that everybody's health in this country would improve. How do you feel about that, Simon? Do you think it's a good idea?
I think it's a wonderful idea, but I think it's going to take time and effort to get that movement to the masses, shall we say.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to highlight them this morning. They're the first restaurant owner. Well, they're not the first. There are a few other restaurants in Los Angeles we know who work very, very hard at it. But they're the first person that I found in persons in a traditional type of deli, lunch business, a breakfast place. I mean, organic breakfasts are very hard and expensive to make because of the cost of organic eggs. And the difference between organic eggs, a dozen of them wholesale, versus retail is maybe $2 a dozen, $3 a dozen. It's a huge amount of money.
Wow.
Yeah. A wholesale price of eggs for most restaurants runs about $17 for 15 dozens. That's about $1.25 a dozen, which is obviously almost half the price of what you paid for them in the market, and then you can add another dollar for organic ones. So it's not only the difference between what organics cost, but even the difference between what you get in the regular market. And the space is so large between those prices, it helps you understand why food prices are so high, because food businesses are making huge amounts of money. So you have any thoughts on that, Ashley?
It's exactly what you said, Simon. It does take time, and I think if one of the owners hadn't become ill, he would not be stopping to look and read the books. Like, he has taken the time to read our books, and he's read the books. And out of it, he realized what was in the food and the fact that it could actually, if it's hurting, it could hurt him, it could hurt his clients. And most of the restaurant owners don't want to harm people. They don't want to harm customers. Yes, it's about making a profit, but their concern is also about taste great food and also about taking care of their clients. So as people go in and start asking more and more, do you have organic or what do you have organic, or are willing not to go into that restaurant and say, if you don't have organic, I can't go into that restaurant, it's amazing how people will change to accommodate. Now, some of the things they have won't be organic, but they will be close enough to organic that's a much healthier restaurant.
I think specifically, Ash, she's talking about corned beef and pastrami. Corned beef is made with sodium nitrate. There's absolutely no other way to make it. And for our listeners, if you go to Blogger News, you can see our blog on sodium nitrate, which discusses how pastrami and corned beef is made and why you really can't have it without it. They've tried natural pastramis, which they describe as just horrible, and I don't think there's any way to do it. But let's talk about what this contrasts. And while these people are moving slowly and trying to make things change, we have Monsanto, who's trying to force GMO seeds on us. And, you know, this is the time of year, June 30th, when what are called 10-Ks, which are the reports by publicly traded and large corporations to the SEC, earnings are reported, et cetera. So I stole a few notes out of Monsanto's releases and interviews for the end of the quarter. And they're saying they've been working for years to shift its business focus away from farm chemicals into genetically altered seeds. So So the third quarter earnings showed their strategy was working. Their profits were like, I don't know, 2.6. The revenues were $2.65 billion, and I think they showed an $800 million profit. So you can see how profitable GMO seeds are and why it's so important for them to not only control the American market and the world market. And what bothers me most about this particular report of theirs is they're just saying what we've been saying for the last couple of years. Their primary interest is addicting the world to genetically altered seeds and eliminating natural ones. That's how they intend to make money in the next decade. So at the same time when I read their report, I looked very carefully at their international sales versus sales in our country. Their profits were boosted by selling this genetically engineered corn and soybean seeds, to foreign governments and to the U.S. government. In the last year, the U.S. government's bought a huge amount, billions of dollars, of these genetically modified seeds. And what they do with them is they give them to countries like Zambia as foreign aid. So when they say, oh, Zambia got $4 billion in foreign aid, well, that $4 billion was purchased from Monsanto and other companies for genetically modified seeds and other things instead of giving them cash. So that's some of the problems with our reducing foreign aid in this country is if we reduce foreign aid to these African nations, we're going to cut back on sales from Monsanto, which gets into Simon's favorite topic, and that is the politics of it. That's why Monsanto pushes the president to appoint so many Monsanto employees to, among other things, how about our trade representative is a former Monsanto guy. So he's out there working these foreign aid and trade deals, and coincidentally, Monsanto sells a bunch of seeds to the U.S. government. And it's that kind of politics of money that's made balancing the budget and our debt ceiling so very difficult to manage in the U.S. Because, you know, while the Democrats are complaining about entitlements and Social Security and all the rest, the Republicans are worried about foreign aid because the foreign aid is how they rip off the government. So at the same time that Monsanto's right-wing conservative members are saying, oh, we're against entitlements, we need to cut back on these, the real point is, no, we need to increase foreign aid so we can rip off more money from our government. So, Simon, do you have any observations about that Monsanto?
Well, yeah, you've hit one of my buttons, Manny.
Boy, I'm getting better from my distance, aren't I?
Right. It's off topic because I don't believe it's part of our foreign aid package, but I'm absolutely horrified at what's going on in India with Monsanto.
Oh, yeah.
I read a statistic. 1,000 farmers a month are committing suicide. I mean, this sounds like, you know, something that's an urban myth or urban legend, but it's absolutely true.
Yeah, it sounds like a sci-fi movie from the future, right?
Right. But the reality is that the farmers are forced, literally forced, to buy high-priced Monsanto seeds. They're not permitted to, retain seeds year by year. They have to buy new ones. The whole economics of the Indian farming system are in tatters. These genetically modified seeds require, some people are estimating, twice the amount of water that the natural seeds need. Many crops are just withering on the vine, excuse the pun. It's awful. We're causing, or not we, Monsanto, all by themselves, are causing a crisis in a very, very large country.
Well, Ashley sent me an interesting article. I'm going to read a couple notes, and Ashley can comment to us. On the June 27th, which is a couple days ago, the delegation of India-based U.S. investors arrived for a meeting to discuss, among other things, protection of U.S. Investments in Nepal. Well, wow. I mean, is that a serious issue in this world? So when they arrived, Ashley brought out this whole list of it. They're meeting with the prime minister, and they're discussing the politics of food and investment in India, Nepal, and other places.
Sounds good, right, Simon?
Yeah, sounds good.
Boy, I'm excited. Delegation of U.S. Woo, I love it.
Okay, so this is first led by U.S. business organization. 13 years are going to explore trade investment, the whole number. So, and they're building on the recently signed U.S.-Nepal Trade and Investment Framework Agreement, which was negotiated by a government. So let me run a few names by here. All the representatives are basically Indian executives, but this is who the executives for. Bell Helicopter, Monsanto India, Coca-Cola India, GE Healthcare, Johnson & Johnson, Walmart. Can you imagine a Walmart store in Nepal? I guess they put it in the base of K2 or Everest or somewhere up there.
And these are our delegates,
right,
representing the United States.
Rockwell Automation. Okay, we're going to call them helicopters. And, of course, the American Chamber of Commerce India, which is represented by that. So here's
Monsanto.
With Monsanto. So basically, when you look at who these corporations are, you go, wait a minute. What do these prod people sell? Basically, what I was just saying, defense and genetically modified foods. So is every American business delegation right now going to sell the weapons of war and the weapons of mass destruction over civilization, GMO seeds? And it's happening all around the world. So when I listen to you talk about how this upsets you and how bad it is in India, it can't get any better, can it, Ashley?
No, it can't, especially when people are saying that, say, for example, in Africa, they're saying there's an 80% loss in their corn production since they put in GMO corn. And the same thing happened in India. And everything that was promised to people over a 15-year period, consistently they're saying it has not happened. I also found it interesting that, like, in Argentina, Manny, I didn't understand this until I was reading how this happened. Now, you were saying that they were forced to use Monsanto. Well, what happened in Argentina was, or in South America was, people would plant the Monsanto seeds, which required 7 to 8 times the amount of pesticides over years, okay? Then it built up and it became 7 to 8 times in order, because it became so resistant to weeds. Then the guy next door who was organic, they had so many bugs that his crop would die, and subsequently he was forced to change over to Monsanto. So the forcing is that this bull that they're saying in this country, well, we can plant, you know, we'll mix the organic with the non-organic, and we'll do the non-organic more Monsanto, and we're all going to live happily ever after. It isn't going to happen. It's already been proven in other countries. And as you're saying, it's resulted in suicides in India. And if people think it's not going to happen or has happened in this country, please. People are losing their homes and their property.
Oh, yeah. I'm just frankly horrified with what's going on. You know, it's almost like Monsanto should be dragged to The Hague, to the World Court, you know, for war crimes.
I think so too, Simon. And unfortunately, their partners is the USDA, you know, the Agriculture Department, and the research departments. And so the USDA has partnered with them, along with Bill Gates, and, you know, who's making a profit off this. He's buying up the stock while forcing Monsanto to sell whatever.
Well, no, Bill Gates participated in negotiating these deals and helped influence the government to do some of this at the same
government
time.
Government U.S. or...
The United States government. At the same time, they was buying huge blocks of Monsanto stock, which they list what his personal purchases are, but having personal experience with dealing with Gates and one of my companies, his family trust is larger than his personal holding, and they basically buy what he buys. So at the end of the day, you really don't know how much money he's investing, because he hides it in his various corporations. So his investment may be substantially more than what they've been disclosing in the respective newspapers.
Right? While pushing Monsanto.
While pushing Monsanto. They're like they become new blood brothers or something. And that's really disgusting. And, you know, and I have a great deal of personal respect for Bill Gates, but at times he needs to reassess his vision of life. He really does. He's decided he's going to invest all these $1 billion in projects, but when you look at the projects, like, we need schools in the United States, but he's funding schools abroad. We have starving Americans, and he's trying to feed people in America.
In other countries, Africa.
But what bothers me most is Ash and I came across a statistic that we heard repeated on CBS News the other day. On any given day in the United States, more than 75,000 American war veterans are homeless. I want to repeat that. On any given day in the United States, more than 75,000 American veterans are homeless. And Bill Gates should be helping them, and so should a lot of these other trusts. They use these trusts to help countries where they can help themselves financially with their businesses. And that is not the ultimate dishonesty. It makes a mockery of the Republican theory of trickle-down. None of the money that Bill Gates is put into this trust is trickle-down to Americans. It's trickling down to business interests around the world. And if you don't have any comment on that, I want to move on unless you guys want to engage. Go ahead, Simon. I'll take your muzzle off.
Boy, you're getting really good at hitting my buttons.
I can hear it pop over here.
No, I am so frustrated. America used to be this wonderful country, a country of opportunity. What do? We're letting people that laid their life on the line to support America go homeless. People that live here in America are going hungry. There are kids that go to school every day, and the only meal of any substance, and generally speaking, it's poor substance, is their school lunch, because their parents are too poor to feed them at home. And yet we can throw billions of dollars to other countries. I mean, I hardly view Japan as a poor country. How much money have we, money and goods and stuff have we sent to Japan following the tsunami?
Right.
While people in New Orleans still aren't living in their homes, the fishermen are still starving in your area. And there are floods and horrible, devastating events across this country right now caused by the weather change. And it's just horrible to me. It pushes my button too, Simon. It's very sad.
And I want to add, at the same time, the Tea Party is suggesting that we give up the EPA and let people like BP control their own destiny. Oh, yeah, there's one thing that people in your area want to do is let BP make their own decisions, right, Simon?
Oh, absolutely. Oh.
I'm sure there's people down in your area that still need health, treatments and have health concerns from the Corexel 9500 and the other horrible toxins that were thrown in the air.
Here's the problem. It's going to be going on for years and years and years. But no one talks about BP anymore.
They've moved on.
Oh, yeah, that's a yesterday's story.
Yeah.
But, you know, family businesses that have existed for generations are gone. You've destroyed the economy.
And I've been thoroughly disgusted with the handling of the situation by what's his name, Feinberg, and how he's handled the payoffs to local citizens. He seems to think this is New York City, where people keep receipts and run their businesses differently. These are fishermen. They don't sit around keeping books and records that to be audited later on. I mean, these are people who get up every day. A lot of them have reading problems. Some of them never really spent much in time in school. And I don't mean that in a critical sense. They come from a life where people start making a living in fishing when they're very, very young, and that's their life. So they're more vulnerable to this than other people, and I just really am bothered by the way our country and other people have mistreated them, and the way these so-called charitable groups are helping everybody in the world, but just aren't helping anybody in America. It's
certainly, if Bill Gates and some of these other people who are going to these other countries and giving so much money, supposedly, to these other countries, there's just no excuse for anybody to be starving in this country.
No.
Right. If Bill Gates is concerned about education, throw some money at, let's say, the Board of Education in Chicago. But Chicago has a real problem right at the moment. They've got no money. They're closing schools like it's going out of fashion. Spend your money here.
And by the way, that's happening here in Los Angeles. We're not exempt from that at all, Simon.
It's across the country. It's almost like,
right,
let's dumb down America. If we dumb everybody down, then we can really get away with it. I know that's an extreme, but maybe not.
Yeah.
Right. We're already there, but I mean, that they're making it a world of haves and have-nots.
Yes.
There's nothing in the middle.
Right, and that's my comment that I make repeatedly throughout our books, that we're returning to the robber baron period of the 1880s, only this time it's corporations and not individuals. And I'll tell you how unfettered corporations are, because we're going to shift a little bit. I'm always upset about off-label uses of drugs, which gets a little away from food, but most food manufacturers are involved in the drug business. One time, for example, Monsanto owned Pfizer, who makes a number of drugs, and not coincidentally, during their period they owned them, they really slipped to some depths of dishonesty. Well, I turned on the TV the other night, and I see a drug for Cymbalta, C-Y-M-B-A-L-T-A, which I'd never heard anything about, and they're talking about osteoarthritis and how if you have arthritis, this will cure it and this and that. And, of course, they had that famous disclaimer again: if you take this drug, you will die, your left leg will fall off, your wife will die of some kind of unknown disease, and your children will be doomed forever. But take this only on your doctor's instructions. So Ashley looked it up. So go ahead, Ashley. Tell us about this drug, Cymbalta.
It's used actually for the treatment of depression and generalized anxiety disorders. Are you there, Simon?
Just before we went on air, I was watching, I think it was HLN or True TV, and guess what advert came up? Cymbalta.
this is perfect. It's perfect for anybody with excessive worry. If you have tension that disrupts daily life, if it lasts for 6 months or longer, you know, we need Cymbalta. And it also used to treat pain, tingling caused by diabetic neuropathy. That means, you know, nerve damage developing people who have diabetes. Now, they're saying if you have nerve damage that's caused by diabetes, take this drug that was specifically meant for depression and anxiety. I think that's called off-label use.
So if you're depressed about your arthritis, this is a great drug because you can take the drug, hopefully get rid of some pain, and stop being so damn depressed about the fact you hurt so much. I mean,
it's absurd.
Yeah.
It's called off-label use.
And I, what I love is the warning. You know, it may cause suicidal thoughts. So if you have suicidal thoughts, call your doctor. Oh, yeah, right.
Before or after you slit your wrist. I can never figure that one out, Simon.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I don't think so. But I, you know, Manny, isn't this illegal though? Isn't it illegal to do this off-label use way off in the left field? You know,
yeah, of course
treating
it's
your osteoarthritis with a depression drug.
Well, that's what bothers me is this is an off-label use. I mean, and here they are flaunting it in the face of the FDA by running these expensive ads they're flooding the nation with, and the FBI pays no attention. And at the same time, as you've probably seen, Avastin has been the subject of a lot of news because the FDA actually, after every other country in the planet and four on Mars, decided to ban Avastin for use in treating breast cancer because every test shows it's really a placebo. They basically finally got up and voted to ban it. But they only banned the off-label use, which means that this drug is still available for use and for other kinds of treatments. Specifically, I believe it's used for other forms of cancer. So what does that mean? That means that your doctor, because it's still a legal drug, can say to you, don't worry, it's off-label, but I don't agree with the FDA, and they were wrong. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to prescribe you this drug anyway. So if anyone thinks that the FDA taking some action to ban the use of Avastin is going to in any way stop it, they're crazy. Because
okay.
Those are what I'm prescribing.
All right, I have a question, and maybe it's a silly question. I was under the impression that when the FDA permits a drug onto the market, it is on the clear understanding that this drug does X, Y, and Z, and it cannot be used for off-label purposes. Am I wrong here?
Yes and no. Yes, that is a strict analysis of the law. But that does not include the wink-wink that goes with that. Because even though that's what the law says, everybody in the world knows that's not what happens. What happens is a doctor go, wow, you know, the drug salesman came in and told me, if I prescribe this stuff for your bunions, they're going to go away. So, after all, I believe every word the drug salesman tells me.
Who
so,
knows nothing about medicine or pharmacy or pharmacology or has never gone to school for any of the above.
Right, and according to him, I can do this. So guess what? I'm going to give you this drug, and hey, let's see if it works on you. How do you spell the word experiment on somebody? Because that's what they're doing.
And plus, Manny, isn't this part of the ghostwriting we talked about? I mean, essentially, the reason these companies make billions of dollars and go into blockbuster status with their drug is that during the ghostwriting period where advertisers go in and say, you know, if we sell this also as that, exactly what you're saying, we also sell this as that, and it's really not for that, but we sell it and promote it as that. By the time the drug comes out, everyone's going to believe that ad, and therefore it'll be sold as that. Isn't that kind of how it works?
But I still have a problem here. It's one thing having a drug rep turn up at a doctor's office and go, hey, doc, you really should be using this. The FDA says, it's designed for X, Y, and Z, but nod, nod, wink, wink, you know, we've found out it's quite good at this. I mean, it's behind closed doors. FDA is going to turn a blind eye. But it's an entirely different thing when you launch a national TV ad campaign offering this drug for, you know, off-use purposes.
Well, that's because you point out the FDA is really a stooge of the drug industry and the rest of them. And I'm going to go to the next one because it's part of this conversation about how deceptive and deceitful this is. This is a story about a linebacker for the St. Louis Rams, a gentleman by the name of David Vibora, who was suspended for, I believe, four games and has this huge blight on his record and personal slam because he was caught testing positive for a banned steroid, despite the fact he complained to the NFL that he used a contaminated product that was on the NFL's approval list. And as usual, our highly sympathetic National Football League just really didn't care, and they suspended him anyway. So he sued the manufacturer, and just the other day he was ordered $5.4 million judgment against this company because they fraudulently represented what was on the label, and they'd always been putting the steroid on because guess what? Their product wouldn't work without the steroid. The same way we say that, oh, for example, yeast and a million other products contain MSG, and genetically modified foods made into packaged foods don't have any taste unless you have MSG, but nobody wants MSG. So they hide it and say no MSG on the labels. Well, in this case, they issued a supplement drug that was actually subject to some approval by the FDA, and they hid the steroid in it because they knew the drug wouldn't work if it didn't have the steroid, and it wouldn't help people get bigger in the weight room. And almost every one of these weight room drugs, like, you know, build more muscle, all this other stuff, have steroids in it. They've always had steroids in them. They had them when I was pumping iron to play sports in high school. They used to sell wheat germ tablets and vitamin E oil with their steroids in them to help you get bigger for the football season. It was just crazy. So anyway, this is the biggest award for a fraudulently misrepresented label, and they basically were selling this product for all this time, and even after he complained, the FDA never invested him. He has now won a lawsuit against him for a huge amount of judgment, and I've heard no statement from the FDA, and I check constantly because I want to know if the FDA is going to look at this judgment and go, oh, well, they got a fraudulent label. Maybe we ought to do something about them. But they haven't done anything about them, and the truth is they won't. And that's been your observation, right, Ash?
Absolutely. And my question, too, is when you're looking at some of the this may be extreme, but some of the steroid complaints with the cyclist and,
oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, it makes me wonder if they're innocently taking things, too, without knowing because it's just not on the label.
Well, wasn't it the Mexican soccer team that got accused of cheating because they found steroids in their tests, and they also claimed that that basically that it was a contaminated food?
Yes, there were in Latin America, there were five players in Mexico for failing drug tests, and the players were unknowingly consumed beef containing banned drug, clenbuterol, I can't pronounce it. So they were for the Gold Cup, and they tested positive for it. All five members ate at the same restaurant. All five members had identical tests. All five members were kicked off and were not permitted to do the Gold Cup. So they're saying it came from the beef, and they're saying, oh, well, this is not allowed in our beef, so therefore it can't exist. But that's no different than to me, you know, this is in our product, and it's not in our product, therefore it can't exist. So they need to start testing maybe some of the beef to see, too, if it has hormones that they're declaring is not in the beef.
Well, and
this is going to be the next thing, you know, this drug testing. Not only are you going to have to give a urine sample, but you'll have to bring a little piece of what you had for breakfast.
Oh, you know, Simon, they may have to. I mean, it's like, what are we going to slip into the food next?
Well, and the funny part is Mexico played the U.S. in a soccer match in Los Angeles that's been the subject of a little bit of controversy. And among the other things is that the American audience held up these, you know, cards that said, eat more meat, get disqualified, and all sorts of other things were, you know, in sports aren't considered offensive, but would be in the walk of life. But so, you know, once this happens to you, you know, you're kind of is stuck with this image the rest of your life, and it's really unfair.
It turns out that the World Anti-Doping Agency also had a meeting, which I don't know what the conclusion was, that they may have to change the rules on this clenbuterol testing in response to the controversy. So we'll see what happens, you know, with the controversy that happened in the Tour de France and now with this. They may have to change all of it because who knows what it's in.
Well, the fact is they're faced with a dilemma, and that dilemma is if they don't do anything, they're going to have to disqualify every cycling team in the world. And that's the bottom line, because I think most people agree that cycling is the most tainted area of sports ever. I mean, I've never seen anything like it in my life, and I've been a sports fanatic since my youth. And the fact is that it's just right now so dishonest. I mean, you, everybody sees the whole controversy over Lance Armstrong. I mean, who knows what to believe? In light of all the mess that I've seen in recent years, there's reason to believe that he may or may not have done it. I mean, who knows? But the fact is that the situation has become so critical and world doping that nobody knows who's honest and who isn't honest. And so many foods are contaminated, so many off-label uses for drugs, so much deception, that until we have some worldwide standard and some rules enforced, it's not going to be easy. And a quote out of this Vivora case I thought was interesting. It said, this case should be a warning to all supplement companies to improve their manufacturing process and ensure their products are steroid-free. The judge, however, just viewed it as outright fraud. They made fraudulent representations. And at the end of the day, you know, that's the bottom line. You cannot trust anything on a label for any product sold in the United States.
Well, that's terrible, though, Manny. That's kind of depressing. So how do you get around that? What do you think people should do?
Well, we're all pushing for truth and labeling. But first, I want to comment. Everybody says, oh, gee, everybody was so honest before. There's a presumption that people in this country in the 40s and 50s, particularly after World War II, had a higher level of honesty than, you know, companies do now. But I grew up during that period. My father was a corporate lawyer in the film business, and I didn't see any honesty. I mean, I really didn't. It was like one dishonest thing. Even during the war, we had a family friend who was in the beef business, and Simon, I don't know if this was true in England, but you could not get beef without a certain types of certificates and ration slips, et cetera. Well, my father collected them in the restaurant business because people had to use them and to get certain type of catered parties, or whatever. Well, at the end of the war, they were going to audit this friend of my father's in the who supplied him the beef and was the, one of the biggest suppliers in Los Angeles. And to make a long story short, my father had to lend him or give him, I don't know what they finally agreed to, literally a few boxfuls of these various rationing certificates to keep him from being indicted. So even during World War II, I mean, Howard Hughes was accused of war profiteering. And so everybody who looks at that period, 40s, 50s, and through the early 60s with some period of honesty, should look at it again. Corporations were just as dishonest. They just had better PR, less news outlets, no internet, and no muckrakers. So the end result is probably the only muckraker of that period was, Edward R. Murrow, who made himself famous because he was only unwilling to stand up and say anything. So
right. I mean, you know, the world has changed a lot. You could, back in the 50s and 60s, you could pull some enormous scam, shall we say.
Oh, yeah.
And the damage would be geographically limited. No one, you know, if you did it in L.A., no one in New York would ever hear about it. Today's a slightly different world. You pull a scam today, everyone on the globe knows about it.
Well, hey, Simon, in this were the 50s, we couldn't do either this show or our Saturday show, Surviving the 21st Century. They would have a shot, or no one would put us on the air. And if they did, our show would be severely truncated and edited because nobody would have the courage to do that. And I'm going to add a story. I read a obituary this morning of a child actor who died, who was a well-known child actor in the 30s or so, who later married the famous Freddie Fields, who was a real heavyweight deal maker and agent in the show business for about 40 years, representing everybody from Clark Gable down the line. And what happened is she earned a fortune, and she expected to get $150,000 in 1939 when she turned 29, and she ended up getting a check for $960 between her mother, grandmother, and the banks. They stole all their money, and nobody did anything. And by the way, that was the same year that Jackie Coogan turned 21 and found out his parents had spent all his money, and they passed child labor laws in California, known as the Coogan Law, to protect kids, and now you know children's money has to go into trust. So what happened and how she went to Hollywood is her grandmother saw an ad for $50, you get a personal interview and sign up with a major studio, et cetera, et cetera. She paid the $50, got a ticket, came from, I believe it was somewhere in Atlanta, around Atlanta, to Los Angeles to get her granddaughter in the movies. And when we went to the address for the meeting, it was a vacant lot in Hollywood. So she ended up having to work as a maid till, and actually her daughter became a star. But now if that happened to somebody, they'd be on the evening news and they'd be searching this guy out on the 10 most wanted list, right?
Absolutely.
You know, in the 1920s, she just went up as another person who got screwed by a con man. So, and the same was true with Ponzi, who did a scheme in the early 20s. If someone like Ponzi, mentioned Madoff here, tried that now, he'd be all over the news, right?
Or it depends upon who it is.
Yeah.
Because if it's some big corporation that's running the Ponzi, I don't know, Manny, do you think?
Yeah, I'd say, well, yes, even big corporations can't hide. But I'll tell you another one of those interesting political stories. That happened with, what's his name, Milken, Michael Milken. He was in the junk bond business and got prosecuted. But they had a choice of prosecuting Michael Milken or going after Prudential Beige for ripping off senior citizens in America of about $50 billion, okay? Oh, no, I'm exaggerating. I think the initial amount was $20 billion. So guess who had the better lobbyists and better political connections? So instead of Prudential being prosecuted, they were sued and ended up settling with the FCC for 10, 15 cents on the dollar, destroying millions of American seniors, while Michael Milken, who did very little, got prosecuted and ended up spending 2 years in jail and caused a collapse of a junk bond market that every expert agrees would not have collapsed if that hadn't happened. So it was a case of the classic American corporation triumphing over an individual, and he was fed to the fodder, and they weren't. And that's the way politics in America goes.
It's a much smaller story, and I can't remember the exact circumstances. There was a farmer was, you know, merrily going along his way with his seeds, you know, seeds that were natural, and he discovered that part of his crop seemed to be doing better than the rest of it. So come seed time or harvest time, he opted to use that part of the crop for seed purposes. Turned out it was cross-contamination from some neighboring land that was using Monsanto seeds, and they sued the guy.
I know. And by the way, they filed about 240 of those lawsuits between Canada and the U.S. I want to change the subject a moment while we're on this whole issue of laws and big corporations, because guess what? We're going to have to cover chocolate on our Saturday show. For those people who are dying to hear about chocolate, they're going to have to listen to us on Saturday morning. But the right to farm versus the public right to know hit a real peak in Idaho recently when the Idaho concerned area residents for environment decided one day to go raid the local county office to get information on the local cattle. It's a factory farm. So they actually marched into the office and demanded to see all the records, the EPA-style records, to try to see what was going on because we're so unhappy. Well, it became a sit-in. Apparently the staff was caught off guard and they weren't prepared to respond to someone's forceful request for files. So while they were, you know, trying to put it together, the county of commissioners, his name is Charlie Howell, and the county planner, let's name him Nancy Marshall, arrived and asked the group to give the records back. So after much of a fight, they left with very few records. So it became a tug-of-war over agricultural records to protect the larger corporations. So, and we've talked about how undercover videotaping at factory farms have exposed all the dangers. Ashley's going to jump in and tell us about some recent ones. So what happens is the factory farms, cattle start to demand that they put laws in to insulate them from what they characterize as unwanted attacks on their already heavily regulated businesses. so they start trying to pass laws. I'm going to run a couple by and Ash can jump in. So I had a whole legislature pass several bills this session, okay? One restricts the public's ability to press lawsuits against existing agricultural operations. The next one takes how dairies manage their manure off the public record by redefining these practices as trade secrets. So the north end of a dairy cow going south is now a trade secret. And the last one is they impose the new requirements on request to view video records to keep people from seeing the truth. So, you know, and this contrast is against Ashley's story about the, you were telling me that they had someone published videos of pig abuse today.
Right. This came out in today's paper. As of this morning, the World Coalition is now demanding less antibiotics on the farm. And, oh, I'm sorry, this was, I'm sorry, I gathered the wrong, that we're going to talk about that one on Saturday. And, yes, there was this morning about videos that came up on the farm, and I don't have that with me, actually.
Well, the bottom line to all of it is that, you know, the videos basically depicted more abuse, the kind of abuse that Simon published a little bit earlier. In fact, it was interesting, Simon, you want to point out how every time you posted it, somehow or another, the video disappeared, and they were trying everything to keep you from posting that video?
It was a bit like playing pin the tail on the donkey.
Yeah.
Here it is. It was Iowa Select Farms. It's the fourth largest pork producer in the United States, and they had retained Dr. Anna Johnson, associate professor of animal science at Iowa State University, to conduct an investigation of the farm's animal handling. They had taken pictures. They had gone into the Chicago-based Mercy for Animals, went in, and they released a video that was taken, and I suggest that anybody who has any doubts, please go look at the video. It's pretty awful. Its operative had reported to the Iowa Select Farms. They had a short video where they were showing castration of the piglets. Their tails were removed without anesthesia. They had intestinal ruptures apparently resulting from the botched castration, resulting, of course, that results in food that will be sick food sold to people. And the workers were throwing piglets across the room. And, of course, this JBS issued a statement that they were shocked. This never happens. They were doing, we don't tolerate animal abuse. They, Mercy for Animals is, you know, using this, going in after gestation stalls, and we had nothing to do with it. Well, the videos are as clear as day. You can't miss what's happening there. It is consistent with every other factory farm video that we painfully have gone through. That it's a horrible thing, and especially since it causes horrible infection in the animals. That infection is passed on to foodborne illnesses, which is, it's passed on to the animals' meat, passed on to you, and people get sick. And it is a constant practice that is going on. So people may say, oh, well, so there's animal abuse, so what? You know, it's my meat, it's going to die anyway. Well, no, it's become sick meat. You may not feel for the animal, and that's your right to not feel for that animal, but it becomes sick meat. So this video was really just came out this morning's news on today.
Yeah, and I want to add something. This is Simon. This is the same JBS, which, by the way, is an Argentine corporation who are just infiltrating everything they can in the United States in the meat market area. And in our books, we list all the different businesses they own in the United States. They are a big player here. This is the same company that took Oprah Winfrey on a little tour of one of their pristine little plants to show her how wonderfully they treat animals, and really embarked upon this huge PR thing to show that they're just the best little food manufacturers in the world, when reality is they're just lying like everyone else.
Can you possibly ship me a link to the videos?
No, absolutely. And there's another video, too, that was from cattle that I definitely think should be up since May. That, you know, and like you said, as fast as you put it up, they take it down. But I think it's one that absolutely should be shown. And people should look at it, because if people want to know why we keep saying, please go organic, or please know your farmer, because it's the difference of healthy animal meat versus unhealthy animal meat.
The reason I'd like the link
is I will snag a copy of it because these videos have a strange habit of disappearing from well-known video sites. Don't know why.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the one that you did that was up in ours, and it's immediately pulled, and you know you can't keep it up beyond a day, right? They don't want people to see the truth.
Yeah, as soon as the industry spots what's going on, there's a takedown notice supplied.
Well, you know, I laugh because we joke that every time we publish a critical blog, they apparently are checking every day your site, Simon, because within the first 100 readers comes criticism of whatever we write, you know, and that only happens when they're watching you. So anybody who thinks we're getting a little paranoid, we're not. I mean, this is just simply the way the industry functions. They basically are attack dogs, and they'll attack anybody who disagrees with them.
This one I really like, too, on this note from this article that just came out, was the fact that they're saying the National Pork Producers Council spokesperson, David Warner, told Meeting Place, which is M-E-A-T, Meeting Place, that the Mercy for Animals are strictly using this to show videos for leverage to ban gestation stalls. So they're just making it up. I mean, come on, how do you make this stuff up? And it's, these videos are worldwide. I mean, it's just, I don't know. So, Manny, what do you think about this law that was passed, though? These laws of, you know, do you think that the farmers trump the public?
Well, no, I think that groups like the ACLU will just, I know they've been daring people in Iowa to pass this law so they can test it, and there's no doubt that someone's going to test this law, because guess what? You know, there's some real freedom of information issues here. The government can't do it. I mean, if they want to try to put a Freedom of Information Act in, similar to what the U.S. government is, I think they'll find the U.S. government's far more powerful than the state. In states like Idaho, they just believe they're so small that nobody will care and that nobody has the finances to fight them. But I think they're going to find out that's not really true, that there are a lot of people out there that aren't willing to let this go by and are going to take a stand on it. So I think that's very important in our country right now. So Simon,
I'm with you. It's vitally important.
Oh, absolutely essential to really everything that America stands for, which is freedom of information, freedom of press, freedom to either agree or disagree with, you know, with whoever you're doing business with, and, of course, some kind of freedom to discover this information. And looking at the time, Simon, we're getting to sort of the end of the day here, and we didn't get to chocolate, so we are definitely going to jump into chocolate next week, on Saturday morning. But I always like to end our show, but you want to add something else?
One thing, and I'm going to get into it further, not only about the antibiotic coalition, because that's a big deal on Saturday, but also I'll get into the fact that there's 800 bags of cat food recalled for salmonella risk from Nestle Purina Pet Care Company. So please look it up today. Make sure your pet does not eat it. The pet gets salmonella, which we will get into the difference with pet salmonella, which is a very serious illness for your pets. So that's a recall that happened as of yesterday. Recall, again, Nestle Purina Pet Care Company's pet food for animals. So take a look at it. The brands of dry food involved, Frisky's Grillers, as well as the Purina Naturals cat food, which is a big seller. So, okay, that's it.
Well, really, and, you know, our thought for the day is we would like our listeners to join the food revolution. It's simple. Just to read the labels, reject foods with additive chemicals, ask for free-range meat, preferably organic meat, avoid genetically modified foods and genetically engineered vegetables, and vote with your paycheck. And as Ashley points out, this applies to your pets as much as anything else. We have 2 8-year-old cats who don't see the vet, whose coats are beautiful and shiny, or never sick because they eat only organic foods, none of this garbage that that you find. I mean, basically, cat food is no better than feeding your children potato chips and Coca-Cola and candy bars. They're just junk to placate them. So in the end, if you want to extend your life by an additional 10 years, consider changing your diet to organic. If you love your pet and you want him to live longer, change their food to organic. You don't have to suffer, and your cat doesn't have to suffer later. Or dogs or anything else from kidney or liver diseases. And it won't cost a lot if you shop carefully. Remember, you can eat the same food you're eating now, but make sure the ingredients are organic, just like your grandmother used to make. So, and if you have any questions, you can buy your book, Mandy's Diet and Enzyme Formula, or read It's Not Your Fault. You can get the link at Simon's site, Blogger News Net, or you can go to our website, howtoeliminatepain.com. So, Ashley, you have any thoughts for us as we leave?
Just looking forward to speaking to everybody again on Saturday, and we'll be covering more on recall on Saturday and some very important issues, including the GMO cocoa issue, about your chocolate and what you can do to keep your chocolate from being GMO and protect yourself. So have a blessed and wonderful day.
So, Simon, you're going to have to hold your chocolate till Saturday.
I'll tell you what, I'm geared up for chocolate. I have a lot to say on the subject. It's one of my it is one of my favorite foods, and I'm willing to take a blind taste test anytime, and I can pretty much identify brands.
Well, we're going to taste test Simon on Saturday morning, so be sure and tune in for the Chocolate Festival. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Simon.
Thank you. This is Simon Barrett for Blogger News Network, wishing everyone a happy and safe day and a healthy day. And please do join us on Saturday. We'll be back on the air with Surviving the 21st Century. Till then, I want to just say goodbye and thank you to Manny and Ashley for taking time out to talk with me today. Till next time, goodbye.